Welcome to the Learning Can't Wait podcast, a Full Mind production. At Full Mind, our vision is to ensure every child has access to an exceptional education. Each episode, we will be joined by pathfinders within and around the education space who are bringing about transformational change on behalf of deserving students. I am your host, Haley Spierbauer. Welcome back, everybody, to the Learning Can't Wait podcast. We have our very first panel of season five, and let me tell you, I am excited. With us today, we have Jacob Cantor, the co-founder of Edlit. Hey, Jacob.
Hey there. Great to be with you today.
Great to have you. We have a return guest, Mr. Brett Rower, the nonprofit and EdTech K-12 strategic advisor. Hi, Brett. How you doing?
Good. It's a pleasure to be back. Thanks for having me.
So happy you're here. And last but certainly not least, we have Candace Sears, the director of instruction with Montgomery County Educational Service Center. Welcome, Candace.
Hi, Haley. So good to be with you. Thanks for inviting me.
I'm so honored that you took time out of your busy day to come join us, Candace, Brett, and Jacob. It's such a pleasure to have you here. I know we have a chock full discussion planned, so let's jump right in. Our first question, as you all know, because y'all are listeners of the Learning Can't Wait podcast, is always, how did you come to be the personal and professional version of yourself? Candace, I'm going to start with you on this one, please.
All right. Well, thank you, Haley. So from an early age, I've always felt this profound connection to the idea of service and empowerment. This intrinsic motivation has guided me through a path of education and leadership where the focus has really always been on the idea of uplifting others. Professionally, my journey began with a clear vision and really to reimagine and transform the educational landscape. My passion lies in creating environments where students can thrive, harnessing like the power of technology now that exists and the innovative teaching methodologies that really tailor and personalize the learning experience for our students. I would also just say the core of my professional ethos revolves around building meaningful relationships, and that foundation has really allowed me to connect deeply with students and educators and communities just to foster that collaborative network that supports growth and learning across the space.
You brought up 2 points there, one specifically about uplifting people and another about connecting with people. I always am inspired when a conversation starts there because inevitably we're going to talk about innovation and technology. That is very much the core of the conversation around education today, but you can't have that without people. And so, Candace, thanks for starting us off with a beautiful overview of how you got to where you are, but also highlighting the central theme of people. All right, Brett, you're up next. Tell us how you got here, please.
Yeah, absolutely. Again, thanks, Haley, for having me. My name is Brett Rower. I spent 16 years in the New York City public school system, from teacher and college advisor up to administrator, and most recently a principal in the Bronx. I think what brought me here in my journey out of education and then into strategic advising, ed tech, partnerships, nonprofit leadership development is similar to what Candace mentioned. It's really two things. One is reflection. So continuing to be curious, recognizing that titles and roles really aren't what's going to move education forward. It's relationships and the willingness to form coalitions around shared missions and values. And I really feel that is what propelled me literally to right here, right now in this podcast, and also the things we're going to discuss today about the state of education and innovation.
I know you're going to have a lot to share. You've spanned quite a few sectors over the past 5 years or so, and you've seen a lot of change both in schools and surrounding schools. So excited to hear your perspective when we dive into the deeper conversation. Thanks, Brett.
Thank you.
And last but not least this time, Jacob Cantor, can you tell us a little bit how you came to be where you are today, personally and professionally, please?
Sure. Again, thanks for having me. So I'm Jacob Cantor. I came to the U.S. from Ukraine as a kid, went through LAUSD public schools, then Cal State Northridge, and a program at UCLA. But as soon as I finished college, jumped into a role with McGraw-Hill, been working with LAUSD for many years, varsity tutor, Stride, taking on kind of strategic projects with AIEDU, C2 Education, Revolution Prep. So really kind of cut my teeth in edtech sales, working with districts and figuring out what solutions students need and also could move the needle forward for students. But it all kind of stems back to my first day at school. I remember Eloro Way Elementary, first day of school, not knowing any English and just crying all day. And like, I've been in my late 30s, and I still have that in my brain. So it just shows you how impactful these different things are for students that stay with them forever, right? So really getting solutions in the hands of students that can give them the life that I'm privileged to have in America.
You know, Jacob, you sharing that anecdote, one, gives me the chills. So thank you for your vulnerability and disclosing and sharing with the audience your story. But two, I'm going to ask all of us to use it as a center for our conversation today. I don't think anyone here or anyone who talks about education intentionally centers various populations, but centering the student will be a call to action for us for the rest of this conversation. All right, so there's a lot of ways we could go from here. I used to say early in the podcast in like series one and two, what's your kind of state of the union of education? And so I want to ask us that. I'm going to start with you, Brett, here. What gives you hope about the current direction of education? And let's just start with the positivity. Let's be those optimists. What gives us excitement about what's ahead?
Yeah, I wake up every day really excited about the state of education. I see a light bulb every day. I have people now reaching out to me asking for specific solutions because there's challenges. And for the first time in a while, and obviously I'm thinking through the lens of AI, there's real hope and solutions. So just to name some areas that I'm most excited about what AI can do in the larger scope of education, one is keeping it student-centered, personalizing learning. I get to meet with innovative education solutions in the nonprofit and for-profit space who show me in a click of a button how they are actually in real time translating verbally and in writing into any dialect. They are able to personalize learning based on future career goals, passions, reading levels, math levels. At the push of a button, teachers are now able to authentically personalize learning and meet each student where they are at an engagement level and a rigor level that's appropriate. That's something that the best teacher in the world could not do with this kind of fidelity just a few years ago, and it's here. So that fills me with the most hope. And then secondly, teacher-centered, those light bulb moments, seeing teachers reignite their passion for education because they see some hope and some lights at the end of the tunnel, that there's something out there that if they are willing to embrace change, can really transform what they're doing, can transform the experience for students, families. They can even get back some of that time that we know is required in education to help students, but can be done so much more efficiently and better. Anyway, that's what's giving me hope right now in the state of education.
I have to tell you, the evolution of this podcast, I'm just going to name it again here. It took all of 10 seconds after this, the real first question of the podcast to say AI. Like that is, for longtime listeners, that is a big change, but it's so real. It's ever present in the conversations around our classrooms. You know, Candace, you're very close to classrooms. You're still at Montgomery School District, a County Educational Service Center, working around the schools in the area of Dayton, Ohio. How does this land with you, what Brett just shared, and what would you add on to it?
Yes, I'm so grateful that Brett brought up the personalized learning component. It is really, really cool to see education is truly moving beyond the traditional models and leveraging the technology to create environments that not only engage the students, but for me, prepare them for the challenges and the opportunities of a rapidly evolving world. This dynamic shift, it instills the hope, fosters a belief in the potential within each of our students, and empowers our kids to pursue their passions with the necessary tools that, you know, to be able to thrive and make a positive impact on society. So just the boundless possibilities that exist, just amazing.
We'd be remiss if we didn't acknowledge that obviously there's things that give us pause as well. So Jacob, not to have you breathe the doom and gloom on this conversation, but what's causing you concern right now as you look at the horizon?
Some of the things coming out even this week with, ESSER cliffs and potential rollbacks of teachers that were hired, districts are going to make some tough decisions this year with everything going on. But, not to be all doom and gloom, right? Like in the state of California, I live in Los Angeles, like there's a huge bucket of funds now for extended learning programs, right? There's a huge bucket of funds for music and arts programs. There's career pathways bucket of funds now, right? So for solution providers that are, in that space for everything that's kind of doom and gloom with ESSER and cliffs and all this kind of stuff, though, there's always different kind of buckets of strategic plans at the state levels for, to really move the needle for students. So, as I kind of I'm really thinking through this, idea of like a district having to potentially pink slip teachers and all that stuff. Like that breaks my heart, right? Like if you're a brand new teacher and you've been teaching for 3 years at a district. So that's kind of top of mind for me, but also, strategic funds available at different states for different initiatives where, we can really tap into and move the needle for students.
One thing I hear often is that the procurement process has some really positive aspects to creating more equitable access for different solutions to be able to access schools, but also has many, many broken components of it as well. Does this land true for all of you on this call? Do you feel like procurement is a system that needs improvement? How do schools and how do, surrounding agencies approach this challenge?
Yeah, if it's okay, I'd love to speak to it from, former educator decision maker, now current person trying to help scale innovation. I think something that I've learned, right, being in New York City, it's its own world. And I did not realize how limited our access was to innovation, even though we are the largest school district in the country. So the last few years have been eye-opening, have been disheartening sometimes, because when I see now the state of procurement, I realize there's a lot of reasons why a certain product or solution is what an educator or a student or a family ultimately are provided. Sometimes it's the best solution possible for that community, sometimes it's not. And so what I've just noticed is it's been a very taxing process watching educators get to those solutions for a number of different barriers, watching how Ed Solutions are sometimes not putting the student or the community at the forefront. And then, most honestly, the time and the inefficiency of it is what has been most disheartening. Education leaders are so busy. They're asked to do a million things. And because they are amazing people, they're going to do them. But it ultimately comes at an opportunity cost to them. Their bandwidth is so limited. So, one thing I'm noticing is how do you get the most innovative solutions in front of the right people is one challenge. And then, how do you make sure that those people have the time and bandwidth to really engage with it and then make informed decisions? So I think that's been something that has really been at the forefront of my mind the last few months. And one of the reasons, alongside Jacob, we founded Edlit to try to bring educators and innovators in education spaces together to have authentic conversations, and then finally to give back to that educational community through shared donations that can fund scholarships and other initiatives, as Jacob mentioned, that funding is always a crucial element. So giving back to educators for their time and expertise has really become a passion of mine that I hope is a much needed change in the procurement system.
Candice, are you busy?
Oh yeah, not at all, not at all. I'm not sure what he's talking about.
So for you, there's probably a lot of ways you look at the available tools and technology and services at your disposal. What goes on in your brain when you're making a decision about procurement?
Yeah, Haley, I'm positioned really well here at the Educational Service Center in Dayton. We have 16 public districts specifically aligned to us here in the county, and it's really beautiful because in our role, that's one of the services that we provide naturally, organically to all of our schools within the county. We know how busy folks are in the schools. We know the work that they're doing. We know the work that they want to do, but we also know how limiting that is. So Here at our ESC, I'm honored and grateful. Our superintendent, she's a forward thinker. She's very open to like, how do we really ensure that our kids are getting the best that they could be receiving? And so out of the instructional services department, that's one of the big goals. We look to see outside of the county, outside of the state, you know, even outside of the country, like what exists, what are those possibilities, where are those, and then how do we ensure that we're getting the best of the best here in our county for our kiddos. The struggle that we have when I think about the question about like the pressing pause is more around, it's the time, it's the pace in which changes are implemented in education. Despite the enthusiasm, I walk into a classroom, I just put some VR headsets on a kiddo. We walk in, the smiles, the aha, the wow factor. Despite the enthusiasm and the commitment to innovation, the transformation of educational systems often encounters just system inertia, where progress towards fully integrating and merging these emerging technologies and pedagogies, it just happens a little bit more slowly than what I would hope and wish. So I think that's the big struggle for us. Brett and Jacob, the work they're doing, they're amazing tools out there, amazing resources. How do we get that for our kiddos yesterday, not next year?
Oh, wow. That really resonates. That really resonates. I can think of one district that will go unnamed where we are still, I think we're on month 11 of waiting for the process to complete. And we're not alone. I've heard many, many folks express similar frustration at schools wanting solutions and not having them in their hands quickly enough. And it's regionalized. This is a problem. You know, we're speaking about the whole country here. We have Jacob in LA, we have Brett and I in New York, we have Candace in Ohio. It's different everywhere. So Jacob, how do you approach, I mean, you've worked in organizations that are national as well. How do you approach the localization of some of these challenges and procurement issues?
Yeah, so I think a lot of it, you know, taking one step back is very relationship built, right? Like some of these folks at these districts I've worked with for 10 plus years, and they were teachers, then transitioned into assistant principals, then now at the district level. So I think a lot of it is really, you know, going back to that relationship of, hey, we've worked with each other for a long time. But I'll tell you, you know, to Candace's point, you know, I know the second largest district here, right? Like their procurement system works where they put out an RFP, you submit information, it might take anywhere from 6 months to 12 months, and then you get approval for that RFP. But that approval is step one. And then you have to go to every single school and say, hey, I'm authorized and I won this RFP along with a couple of other vendors, like let's now work together, right? So for, I think for edtech organizations that are looking to, you know, scale impact and scale their solutions, like, you know, a lot of the times they think, hey, I'm going to win this RFP and the money just starts flowing in, right? Because there was a dollar amount tied to it. Like that's the first step in a long journey, right? That's just the district vetting you and saying, okay, the solution seems interesting. Go see if schools want this. And then they have to make the decisions locally to say yes or no, right? And like with LA, you know, I'm bringing me way back to being 22 and working for McGraw-Hill when there was a textbook adoption going on, right? Like I visited 35 schools a day in LA for years. Right. Like there was a teacher at every single school that was piloting McGraw-Hill textbooks. And I went and saw one teacher. I had it planned out 30 schools, 35 schools a day using MapQuest the night before. No iPhone, no Garmin. Right. Like
what a time to be alive.
Great days, though. Right. That's how I truly learned and, you know, figured out also the parts of LA I've never seen as a young student myself, but, you know, I wouldn't trade those days for anything because it really taught me that, you know, 4 days a week, I was in the field, I was visiting folks, I was having conversations, seeing the good, the bad, the things that they wanted to improve. And yeah, really cut my teeth that way.
I love that we centered ourselves back here a little bit on relationships and the power of relationships. This space education, we are all here because we care deeply about kids. And we care about our system and education. And it's really great when you find other people that are in that with you and you find a path together. So I have a question though about this idea of innovation and education. Y'all are advocates for innovation. So what strategies do you personally recommend for fostering a culture of continuous improvement and experimentation within educational institutions, while also paying attention to the fact that there's often resistance from various stakeholders? It could be hard. So let's say we get through all of the procurement, we have adoption, we're here. How do you get this culture fostered so that these ideas and these new ways of operating are embraced? Who wants to take that first?
I'm happy to maybe just start us off here. And I'm so grateful that you asked the question because it's the world that I live in. It's actually what keeps me going in the work that I get to do. So I think modeling collaborative leadership is really important, Haley. I think that this idea, if I can model being an active listener, if I can model taking it all in, and then this idea, it's truly not somebody at the top making a decision, but it's very collaborative. In that relationship building, the community engagement, how do we really bring community to the forefront of all of this? Whether that's, facilitating some community events or just getting the word out there, showing. It's amazing, again, going back to like something as silly as a VR headset, putting those on the heads of our community members or on, letting parents experience that. It's pretty amazing how that changes the landscape and the excitement. Showcasing real-world examples is another strategy for me. It could involve setting up like some innovation labs. So setting up some true examples and models, and then letting and encouraging some experimentation with that. And then personalization, going back to what we've talked about a couple of times, highlighting the value of tailored learning for our kiddos that's all student-centered in the design.
To your point, sometimes folks just have to try it. And I love that you said, like, bring the VR set to the public. Brett, you look like you wanted to share there. Go ahead.
Yeah, absolutely. So a few things. I've been really fortunate as one of my roles that most fortunate I get to work alongside Candace is as the Ohio Regional Director for AIEDU. So when we talk about innovation, some things that Ohio is doing that's really setting them apart from the rest of the nation, the Lieutenant Governor's office has released an AI toolkit. So a statewide guide to support policy, educators, families across the state. And really become like a beacon for the Midwest in innovating and meeting the future job readiness requirements. Secondly, they're hosting AI summits. So in partnership with OESCA, which are the Ohio Educational Service Center Association, we're putting on these four large AI summits. And it goes back to what you said before about relationships. So I was fortunate enough to head out to Butler County in Ohio back in November, and alongside Candace kind of shared this partnership with a few hundred educators. And so two things that I saw that will relate back to how we really need to change mindset and build positive culture around technology and change is this. We were in a room full of folks and we were talking about what have been your bright light bulb moments with your educators. And there were some people there that couldn't find it. And they were resistant to even acknowledging that there might be some benefits to this. And this is at an AI Innovation Summit. And finally, we talked about, well, has anyone seen something in their county district classrooms? And one of the people's like, well, my wife actually is a teacher and she has to write a weekly newsletter in her elementary school class. And now she uses an AI tool. And we said, great, how does that help her? Oh, she gets it done in 10 minutes instead of 2 hours. I'm like, what does she do now on Sunday? She's like, she gets her life back. And I said, right. So can everyone just pause for a second? If you're able to produce something equal or better in quality in less time, what do you repurpose that time for? And I hope it's reinvesting in yourself because we know teachers are working around the clock. And so that's one, is just making sure when you hear a light bulb, you stop and get everyone to acknowledge it because that's what they need to hear, right? It might not be that exact use case for them, their community, but oh, there's something here. And it took someone trying. So that embracing of an open mindset. And then the last thing I'll say is trying and learning, playing, right? Playful education. So I'm going to name an organization that I'm a really big proponent of because I've just watched light bulbs left and right go off, and it's PlayLab, which is an educational nonprofit. The word play is there, and so is lab. They really allow teachers and educators and education leaders to create. And I've seen in 1 hour hackathons, people leave there and say, this is the best PD I've ever been to. I have something for tomorrow, and I wish I had embraced these kind of tools earlier. So again, when you see those kind of things, champion it, spread the word, and encourage people to just try. So those are my two things I think that really matter in terms of changing the mind shift and culture and education around innovation, especially with all the AI tools that are out there.
You know, Jacob, you and I have a little bit of a shared history in virtual teaching and learning. Today, folks aren't necessarily viewing virtual tutoring, virtual teaching the same way they were 5 years ago when you were in the space. Now, I've been in the space for 7 years, so I too have seen some transformation. Can you take this question and apply it to the evolution that you've seen in virtual instruction in your past roles and your current roles? Because I can say with certainty, there is and has been resistance from stakeholders to this modality, but I know you have a firsthand view of it as well.
So I kind of kicked off my career after McGraw-Hill working for C2 Education, where it was center-based tutoring, right? So I'd spend a lot of time cultivating relationship locally and saying, hey, the facility is a mile away, come visit us, like let's have co-branded events. What can we do for the community? And then, after 4 years of doing that, went over to Revolution Prep, where they were one of the first larger organizations using Zoom, right? Before Zoom was a thing, before video calls was a thing, it was, I had a Zoom license and I was like, this makes a lot of sense. Instead of driving to, Oxnard, I can do an introductory call on 30 minutes on Zoom. And it was quite fascinating, sending Zoom links and having district leaders being like, what is this? Is this safe to download? And now, fast forward to COVID hitting and everyone being forced online into Zoom and really parents experiencing the positives, but also negatives, right? Like there was some of that as well. But really, as a whole, the entire education system going online and experiencing what instruction looks like online. It was fascinating to see, right? And I'll throw it back to you as a question as well. Now that we're past COVID, I'm seeing some districts be very hesitant to online and be very hesitant to sometimes tutoring as well, which we know, right, moves the needle for students as long as it's done the right way. But are you seeing some of that as well on the online front?
Funny you say that because I will say that there are real advocates and folks that are willing to embrace online learning, and some of them are in positions of crisis. And I actually had planned, as y'all probably guessed, to talk a little bit about rural education. Candace, your county spans a couple different types of living environments. So, this episode is part of a series that relates to rural education and the unique challenges that rural schools face. So, I actually would name that my opinion is really colored by the significant need for rural schools to have support of excellent caliber. And for me, that's what it's really about. But I am not a school-based partner. So, I want to really hear from Candace here. Rural schools have very different access to resources than some of their urban counterparts. Candace, can you share from your perspective, spanning a couple different types of regions, how you see districts embrace and uplift their talent and technology while trying to overcome their challenges?
Yeah, absolutely. So I'm again just honored that I get to work in a space here in our county. We span all of the different geographic regions and the demographics that make up those regions. It's just really amazing what we may be handling and working with and trying to strategize through in one district may look very different than the next just because of the diversity within the area that I get to work. But across all the settings, the emphasis is on empowering educators with the skills and the tools that they need to really deliver that personalized learning approach and those experiences. And we focus on both people talent and technological tools, and really try to hone in, like, how do we take the people talent and the technological tools and really start to overcome some of those unique challenges that we may see rural districts specifically. Again, they face limitations in technology and resources, but they're pioneering in personalized education through like a smaller class sizes and community involvement, ensuring that the technology really is serving as a tool to enhance, not replace, that human element that we all believe in and know is of utmost importance in education. We are seeing a lot of like initiatives like mobile tech labs, community-based broadband projects. All of those components definitely have surfaced to bridge that digital divide, allowing students in more of those rural, remote areas to be able to have access to those high-quality educational resources that are available.
Such a unique perspective that you have, spanning all types of environments like that. You know, there are so many benefits to being a part of a rural community. There's community, like highlighted with a capital C right there. Brett and Jacob, does one of you want to jump in on this? What challenges do you see rural schools facing today, and how are they solving them, in addition to what Candace named here?
Happy to jump on. You know, last week I was on with Jamie Green, the superintendent at Trinity Alps School District in basically upstate California. I always feel like when I talk about California, since it's so large, it's like upstate New York, but upstate California. And, you know, thank you to Alan Pratt for connecting me, but such a mover and shaker. And within, you know, we spent like 45 minutes together. And within the first 15 minutes, he was like, yeah, I'm bought into this. Like, this solution makes sense. Like, how do we make this happen? Right. Like, we're moving on this today. And, you know, as you know, that does not normally happen. Right. Like there's normally lots of conversations and then to the board or to the cabinet. And, you know, for him to say, this is going to move the needle for students, like, let's do it that quickly was, I mean, amazing. Right. So kudos to him. And then just this past weekend, he won superintendent of the Small School District Association. So he got recognized by, you know, 70% of his peers in the state of California, small districts. So, you know, shout out to him for winning that. But, you know, I think there are a lot of districts that can really move quickly if they find the right solutions that can really be impactful. And that really happens, it seems like, at rural, right? Like, yes, there's challenges with broadband internet. Yes, there's, you know, other challenges they face. But like, I know during COVID, Dr. Alan Pratt from NREA, right? Like, he worked with T-Mobile, I believe it was, to get, you know, Wi-Fi routers and hotspots and like millions and millions of dollars of services, you know, in partnership with the government, but also T-Mobile, into the hands of families and into the hands of students. And like, there are a lot of great things happening. So that gets me excited for all of those students. You know, is there a long way to go? Of course, right? Are there lots of things to tackle and lots of challenges to, but that's life, right? Like, we'll always have a new, as soon as we solve one thing, we'll always have the next thing to now tackle.
If I could just add, Haley, because Jacob brought up the amazing Alan Pratt. I was so fortunate 2 years ago, I got to go to the NREA National Conference. And, you know, again, only serving in urban education in New York City, I think the thing that was most shocking to me, and it shouldn't have been, so I'm like naming my ignorance, is just how common the problems are. The similarities are the same. The surface is what looks different. I was kind of joking, like in New York City and other more urban areas, the problems are more like vertical, right? You're like in a very condensed area and there's a lot of problems. And in rural spaces, some of the things you're solving for are like horizontal. But like, it still takes 2 hours on the subway for a kid to get across New York City. And it still takes some of these students hours to get there. So what I noticed was really similar in terms of how we solve problems is innovation, for whatever reason, doesn't often get to these two specific use cases, urban and rural. There's always funding challenges, but there's this shared, like, we're all we got, and we're going to make it happen for our kids and our community. That sense of community is super strong. That sense of, you know, grit and grind, and we're going to get it done is super strong. And so, like, I left there really inspired and feeling like a kindred spirit without ever having lived there. Specific challenges as a rural educator. So I say that because urban, rural, like these audiences and these districts really need your help, and they really want edtech innovation to come to them. So please don't overlook them as being too smaller district or as too cumbersome of a procurement process. Like, they need your help. So please make all efforts and double down on these communities.
Yeah, if I could just hop in, Brett, I'm glad that you brought up the challenge for ed tech providers. Like, don't overlook or don't overlook some of the smaller areas. That's actually a benefit and what I get to do in our work here as a county educational service center. We are really able to leverage these tools and think about consortium or be an intermediary, whatever it may look like, to ensure that all of our districts, those very small rural districts, our very large urban districts, everybody has access through more of a shared approach and a collaborative approach here at the county. So when we're thinking about professional development, when we're thinking about getting some of these innovative solutions out there, it isn't necessarily, oh, we've got, 100 kids at a grade level, or we've got 400 kids at a grade level, or we've got thousands of kids. We can really, as a county level, merge all those numbers and really think about bulk and then leveraging the resources across and creating networks so teachers are able to connect with others within their region that can support each other through the process of implementation.
Love an education service center. Right, I can tell you every time I meet someone from an ESC, I'm like, yes, because otherwise this work feels lonely. And one of the things that we talk a lot about, and I'm sure Jacob and Brett really feel, is how different things can be a mile down the road. And this is true in New York City. This is true in LA, and this is true in upstate California, as you name. There's such differences from school to school, but our challenges and our triumphs are so similar. I feel really heartened right now, and I also feel like I don't want to ask the last question because this conversation can continue for days. These are some very smart folks here today on the Learn and Can't Wait podcast that have such a unique perspective, both because of their history and their careers, but also because of their current work. But I'm going to ask the last question anyway, folks. So our last question is, what advice would you give a teacher starting their career? Now, Brett, I know you've answered this before, but perhaps you could share what advice you might give a school leader starting their career today, or someone who's coming into the nonprofit or for-profit space supporting schools, just to like twist up your answer for our longtime listeners. You want to start us off, Brett?
Sure. Yeah, and thank you again for this opportunity to be here today. I think probably when we last spoke was only a couple months ago, but again, the world in education is changing. So totally different vantage point. I would again say embrace innovation and change. Really find ways that will make you a more efficient, better version of yourself, and then make sure you're being very reflective about how you can repurpose that time. Invested in your students, relationships, personal commitments. I think that is something I was not able to do in any facet of my life as an educator. But I really feel like the power of AI is, if used with intention, you can really free up your time and your space to impact students, communities, and also your own personal life. So embrace innovation, embrace change, find AI champions, and pick their brains early and often.
Candace, how about you?
Yeah, so I certainly would echo a lot of what Brett had shared. Relationships, 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 expanding your network, not believing that your network has to be within the four walls of a school building that you may be working within, but also thinking well beyond, not being afraid to ask the questions. Actively listening, like spend time just listening to people. People are amazing. The minds of folks are just absolutely unreal. And so it's so cool how much we can learn if we're able to just listen. And then the open-mindedness also with that growth mindset idea, just be open, hear it out, embrace some of these new technologies, and try it out. Don't be afraid to take risks in the educational space for the sake of our students ahead.
Spoken like a true leader there. The two of y'all, you share things that just help people to really contextualize the conversations they're having. Thank you, Brett and Candace. And Jacob, last but certainly not least.
Yeah, so a lot of this kind of has been echoed on this conversation, but be curious, be open-minded. Candace hit on growth mindset. I'm a Carol Dweck nerd. I used to do a lot of the on-site trainings at schools I worked with around growth mindset for high school teens and their parents specifically around it. But also, Thank you for having us, because podcasts like yours that give an audience to, ideas and to folks that you would have never met or heard from, right? Like, so thank you for what you do, right? There's other cool podcasts as well, Tech Insiders guys. But like, also, one thing to keep in mind as well, in that same spirit of, being curious and open-minded, right? In April, ASU GSV is going on. They're having the air show, which is a couple of days before the actual show, right? Like, I'm really fortunate and lucky to be on the council for the air show. And I mean, talk about a good opportunity to meet with 75 different solutions in the space that are going to be demoing how they work with students, how they work with administrators, how they work with teachers, and also meeting other movers and shakers. And, full circle, I'll take it back to how Brett and I met. Outside of LinkedIn and exchanging some messages, like we had our first in-person meeting at ASU GSV, right? And just gelled and hit it off, and now I feel like my wife says he's my work husband that we text all day long, right? So it's really kind of being in the space where others are and really being open to forging relationships that could be really lifelong relationships. And and I'm also cognizant of not everyone can get out to San Diego in April, right? Like if you're in New York and it's tough to travel into San Diego, right? But there's other opportunities, right? Like some of the things that Brett and Candace are doing, right? Like there's webinars going on every single, it feels like every single day on various topics. So really kind of seeking out those opportunities to learn and just having that open growth mindset around, there's a lot of things that will appear very, very like heavy at first, right? And lots of work to be done. But the more you learn and the more you take it in and the more books you read and the more things you learn about it, like it will all become more clear and it'll become easier to understand.
I love that advocacy for a learning stance. I also want to name that I would never have met Candace today if it weren't for Jacob and Brett. So grateful for the power of human connection. I read an awesome article today about super communicators and how they do what they do. And I shared it on my LinkedIn. It'll probably be old by the time this episode airs, but you have to listen, Candace. That's exactly what you said. And you have to be willing to learn. That's what super communicators do. And I think on this call, we have a couple super communicators, and it made for a really wonderful episode. So first, I just want to thank the three of you for joining me on season 5 of the Learning Can't Wait podcast hosted by Full Mind. I'm so grateful that you're here.
Honor and a pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah, of course, of course. And I really want to thank all of our listeners for tuning in today. We are eager to interview brilliant people like Candace and Jacob and Brett. I am always grateful to hear how the industry is changing, and I appreciate the perspectives that they shared here today. Thank you, everybody.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks for listening to the Learning Can't Wait podcast. If you like what you heard, please rate, review, and share this episode. Be the first to know when we have a new episode by subscribing wherever you listen to podcasts. If you'd like to be a guest on the show or have a suggestion for an episode, email us at podcast@fullmindlearning.com.